As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to the podcast, Season 6, Episode 21. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And we are on video today because we're not with Jaime Holopez Jr., who... for some reason camera shy.
What can I say? He doesn't do that hair every day, you know?
No, it's true. That does take a lot of product and a lot of preparation, a lot of prep work. Yeah, yeah.
If he had to do that hair for us for camera for every week, we'd need a bigger gel budget.
That's true. That's true. We have to figure out like a way to do that spiky hair and the headphones at the same time. I think that's the trick.
Once we work out that serious problem of engineering, we'll figure it out. We'll go forward.
This is a sci-fi podcast. You know, we can have like parallax, you know, views and stuff like that. I don't know why we can't figure out how to maybe Photoshop in the hair or something. That might work. Mm-hmm.
That might be the way to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We could do that. We can just maybe in post I'll Photoshop spiky hair on you and me too, just for fun.
Now we're talking. I could use some.
Alrighty. Okay. Well, let's dig into our fact check. So, this is interesting. 79 years ago, the classic Star Trek villain was created before Star Trek even existed. 79 years ago. That's when the Arena short story was created. And I've forgotten the name of the author, so I have to click on the link. But it literally is the same scenario where one human and one alien are put into an arena and they have to fight it out and that kind of stuff. And let me just see. So it's like, it's kind of like the Gorn and the Metreons and all that kind of stuff. And it was written by Frederick Brown. And he was actually credited as a writer on the Arena episode from way back. Yeah, so there we go. It's kind of a cool little story on the Arena episode, which relates to what we just saw in terms of the last episode of the Trek of the Stars, which are new and worlds and stuff. You know what I mean?
And strange.
Strange. I forgot. Yes, I think we're also strange too. Yeah, and now this is another article here that I posted called Streaming Costs Now Cost More Than Cable. And we've been talking about this, like, you know, the cost of all these various, what do you call it?
Streaming services collectively.
Yeah, they're adding up, they're adding up, you know, death by a thousand cuts, as it were. And now, you know, we've gotten to the point where all the streaming services, if you subscribe, you're paying more than you would for cable. And I don't know about Canadian cable, but, you know, I still think we pay a fair chunk up here, right?
It's true, although especially with if you're at the top tier of a lot of these packages too, you know, if you have the Netflix that's in 4K and you have an extra user and then you add in Amazon and then you add in an Apple and then you add in Crave and then you add in the Crave that also comes with, you know, the bonus channels and stuff like that, it piles up pretty darn fast.
Yeah, sure does, yeah. Did we talk last week about, I know we've talked about Apple and Disney and stuff like that, but did we talk about the fact that Disney's going to start going after passwords the same way Netflix did, and they're going to have this additional user thing and all that kind of stuff?
No, I don't think we talked about that last week.
Yeah, I think they mentioned in this article here, right, that they're cracking down on password sharing, as it were. So I don't know how Disney's going to do it, you know.
Hopefully. I mean, if Netflix can do it, I assume Disney has the same latitude. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the direction the ball is going. I mean, we've had a lot of years of being able to password share across a lot of different things. You know, I'm surprised that we haven't heard from Spotify and Audible and all the other things that people tend to share around. I'm sure in turn, all of them will come after their piece of the pie because they want to keep all those, they want to boost their sub numbers, and they also want to keep the money that they should be getting as opposed to the halves that they're not.
Sure. Yeah. And the next bit of fact check I have here is that, and it's funny because I noticed that you said Oliphant the way you said it last week. I discovered this show called The Rich Eisen Show. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's
yeah,
I don't know
Rich
who he
Eisen.
Is.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, and maybe you can fill me in, but I've been watching a few of his things. He was the one that I posted in the show, I think, last week about how, or 2 weeks ago, about Kevin Pollak talking about how he was on, you know, A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson. That was the show that I was, or the podcast I was talking about. But Timothy Oliphant was on the show, and he corrected Rich Eisen about the pronunciation of Oliphant, because he said Oliphant as well, but it's pronounced like elephant.
Oh.
Right? Because, okay. And because it was really pissing off Timothy Oliphant's dad.
Okay.
That even his kids were pronounced, they're like, where did that come from? Like, you know, so he corrected him. And of course, you know, it's funny because Timothy Oliphant said he's been letting it slide on all these years. Right. And he says, oh, well, can I call you Tim? He goes, well, no, you don't know me that well, you know.
As somebody who has a bit of a complicated last name, at least to look at, I can empathize that you do kind of let it roll a lot. And so I've had a number of people over the years continually mess my name up, and it is what it is.
Mine too, people, because I mean, there's like, my name is Indian Bengali, but it also is, it's a Persian name, Persian girl's name. Pronounced with a short, what's it called, long I, when you say the I, and then I get all kinds of, you know, Russian pronunciations and stuff like that, but nobody ever says it correctly, which is Mitra. Yeah. But I've, you know, Mitra, you know, I've dealt with all that stuff.
It's a great way to screen your phone calls.
I'm sure you've had your issues too, so at least it's not Stromalopoulos, that's all I gotta say.
That's true, we could all be Snuffleupagus.
True. All right, let's jump into the headlines. Let's see what you got for us today, John.
Headlines. Well, we'll start with the obvious one. So we are here because we've just finished watching the first two episodes of Star Wars Ahsoka, which is what we're going to talk about today as our main. But we're doing that because they decided to bump things up. So they've decided to do something very interesting for Disney+. They're dropping this essentially in prime time in East Coast North American time. That is 9 o'clock Eastern time. Is when the new episodes are going to go up, which is not coincidentally the same time that you would get a Game of Thrones or a House of Dragons or a prestige show time slot. So it's an interesting experiment. And, you know, I know a lot of people who were like, they had their popcorn ready. They were, you know, ready to sit down at 9 o'clock and watch the show tonight. It's interesting to think of a streaming show as appointment viewing, but that's kind of what they're making it.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, so just for clarity, when would Obi-Wan or the Marvel stuff, when would that have premiered?
They were dropping those at midnight Pacific time.
Oh, right. Okay.
So 3 o'clock in the morning for East Coast North America. So, and I do know people who were making the effort to either stay up or watch those first thing in the morning or whatever, because they were just, they don't want to get spoiled over the course of the day, or they want to have that as part of their discussion as part of the day. This way, in theory, tonight they dropped two episodes. So we did have, you know, an hour, 40 minutes, something like that to watch in one go. For the upcoming weeks, we expect it'll probably be 45 minutes to an hour per episode. And And yeah, by 10 o'clock, there should be discussion on social media. There'll be reviews, there'll be blog posts, there'll be all that kind of stuff popping up. So it kind of captures a moment, I think, a little bit better. So interesting strategy. I'll be curious to see how it does. But we'll get a little more into that in a few minutes when we talk about the show.
Yeah, I'm a lot happier. I'm a lot happier about the fact that they're doing this as episodic and dropping it, you know, with space between them, right? Like, as I'll talk about Solar Opposites in my thing here, but they dropped 6 episodes at once, and it was kind of like I had to pace myself because I would just sit there and watch them from end to end. But you need breathing room between, right? So
yeah. I mean, we've had the discussion back and forth about the pluses and minuses of both methods, but I think shows like this, you really want to have the conversation. You want to ramp up. You don't want to just have it all over it in one go. But I don't know. I know that there's some people who don't agree with that philosophy. So.
Well, they don't listen to this podcast and get to hear how you guess what's going to happen next week, and quite often are right. But anyway, speaking of that, Mando.
So we were talking about this recently, the fact that, you know, there's a lot of limitations on the fact that, you know, so many of these streaming shows that we've come to love have... Once they are taken from these channels, if they are taken from these channels, there's no opportunity to view them offline. And apparently the gods heard us, or at least Disney's marketing department. So Mandalorian season 1 and 2, WandaVision, and Loki season 1 are all coming out on Blu-ray and 4K Ultra HD coming out later this year. Interesting timing. So they're coming out in these nice, you know, steelbook packages and all kinds of fancy stuff. You can click on the link in our show notes. But it's an interesting development that they're putting these out. Although, it's funny that the 4 of these are the ones that they chose. Obviously, they're amongst the most popular. People will buy them. People who are passionate about, you know, Marvel, Star Wars, etc. But we were talking specifically about stuff that's been canceled, like the Willow series that was canceled and then not only canceled, but removed from the service that you can't even watch it anymore. I'll be curious to see if maybe the sales of these will be watched closely from the Disney side to see if they do really well. Because if they do, then maybe they'll start chucking out more of these things. But there's just so much content that is exclusive now to these streaming platforms. And not only is it exclusive to the platforms, but now it's exclusively buried by the platforms too. So I'll be curious to see how this trend goes. If these 4 do well, if maybe they'll roll out some more of them.
I wasn't aware that Willow was not available anymore.
Yeah, not only did they have to make the call to not come back with another season, not in small part, I'm sure, due to the strike as well as the cost and everything else. But they actually pulled it down because it's that way they don't have to pay the residuals on it. So it's not even available anymore.
Is that what the strike is about?
Well, who knows? Maybe if they come up with a great agreement, that kind of content will suddenly reappear. But for the time being, it's gone. It just doesn't exist. So, and again, it's not like we were talking about cable versus streaming, but at least with cable, like, I can set my PVR and record a show. As long as I maintain that service, a lot of this stuff lives on my PVR ad infinitum, although now we have virtual PVRs as opposed to regular ones, so they can go in and just fry those things from service too. So it's becoming an interesting place to be where, you know, you could fall in love with something and never see it again.
Are you on the virtual PVR thing, like Bell or Rogers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, because
yeah.
We still have the hardware PVRs here. And when we go to the next thing, yeah, we're going to get rid of, move over to Bell. So Bell, get ready. when we make our move, we're just going to go right to Crave instead of Rogers.
Yeah.
It's been a good ride, Rogers. You've had all our fun. But coming back to the point you were just talking about, though, I think it's an extra revenue stream for the producers to make money, because I think that, you know, we talked about this before on the show too, that streaming doesn't pay, right? I think all the streaming services are struggling with the pay once, consume as much as you want stuff. But if you want Mandalorian and you want a good copy of it and you want to have it in, you know, forever, you buy the Blu-ray, right? We've talked about that before, right? So
that was the model for 40 years. It just seems like it had started to slip. But now it seems like this is sort of a toe back in the water of trying to do it this way to sort of see if maybe there's an audience for this stuff. I'll be curious to see if this is the beginning of a trend or if this is just a blip. But
well, I mean, people have gone back to vinyl, right? Vinyl. And I even heard cassettes are coming back too, right? So
cassettes are back. And actually, it's funny because the joke for me for a while was, you know, I'm going to start buying all the CDs I can while they're still cheap before the Gen Zs all come after them. And I just read an article the other day that said, Gen Z just discovered CDs. Look out. And I was like, great. Now those are going to be like $10 each at Value Village. So yeah, it's funny how these trends keep coming around.
There's a line in one of the episodes of Solar Opposites, just recently, where I think one of the episodes is what's the little girl's name? I've forgotten her name, but she's given a box of cassettes.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And somebody says, yes, because you must listen with tape hiss. Or maybe it was on Futurama. But that tape hiss belongs.
The authentic tape hiss?
Yeah, yeah. That's a required part of the experience, right? So,
yeah.
Anyway. Look, more headlines from Jonathan.
More headlines. Yep. So, speaking of home video, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is coming out on, it's come out now on digital. It is going to be available on physical release very soon. And as part of this release, there's a bit of a kerfuffle, and the kerfuffle is around the fact that apparently the makers of the film were not quite done when they put it out in movie theaters. So the version you're going to see, if you watch it on digital and
on home video release, is the George Lucas cut?
Is not the same as the one you saw in the theater. So no matter how much you love that one, there are going to be more changes. So some fans are quite perturbed about this and have been taking to the places like Reddit and other places like that, because again, when you see something in the theater, you would like to be able to replicate that experience, and apparently the experience will not be identical. So they have put out this one version. They have gone back as they've been trying to sort of tidy it up for home video release. They've made a few changes, including dialogue changes, including scene changes. So there is a pretty significant a blowback out there right now. People are like, hey, what the heck? There's a line that people are apparently hung up on. So it's the line where after spoilers, of course, if you haven't seen Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse? No, what's this one called? Beyond the Spider-Verse?
Across
the Spider-Verse. I got it.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. Yeah, that one.
That's the one. If you haven't seen this, then maybe skip ahead for a couple minutes. But there's a line after Miles has his conflict with Miguel O'Hara, the Spider-Man 2099 character, and he is basically walking away from him, and he says, you know, you need to come with us. And he says, nah, man, I'm going home. Apparently they cut that whole line out, which was kind of a moment, right? Like, that's the moment where he's like, you know, I don't have to do things your way. I can do it my way. Kind of, you know, it's a moment for Miles. And apparently they've cut that scene out. So people are a little perturbed, understandably so. I'll be curious to follow this story over the next little while and see how they decide to go forward with this.
Maybe get the Laserdisc, you get the better version of it. Like, you know, Blade Runner, right? But then, you know, if only.
That's the crazy thing is, like, how many versions of a film are we going to have out there? Are we going to have the ultimate cut and the perfect cut and the, you know, when is art done? Is art done when it's shown to us? Okay, then keep that version and then make a different version and say, oh, this is the extended cut, or this is the final director's cut, or whatever you want to call it. But, like, at least differentiate. What they were trying to do was sort of apparently slide it under the table, and people were like, what?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I can tell you, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that my old art teacher used to say every artist needs someone behind him with a sledgehammer to hit you over the head when you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because otherwise most artists will never be finished. I look at paintings I did in my 20s, and I look at them, and I go, I could have done that little part slightly different, you know, but unlike George, I don't have the budget to go back in and fix everything, right? So,
well, so is art done when you die? Is that the end of art?
Well, the end of your art. I mean, otherwise it's somebody else is picking it up and you know, being derivative or whatever. But
well, if you create a film, what if somebody takes that film and colorizes a black and white film? Is it still your film?
No, it's wrong.
Yeah. So again, it's a weird line. And
I mean, I'll watch it.
Stuff like this continues to bring that to the forefront, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's admittedly, I have used services to color pictures of my grandmother, for example, just to see. Mm-hmm. What that could look like, but yeah.
It's not like you're being like, look at this great color photo of my grandmother the way it was originally taken in color. See right. The color?
This is an interpretation of what possibly could have been, maybe, sort of, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It goes back to like, was it a Pepsi commercial or Coke commercial that had Marilyn Monroe and Humphrey Bogart in it? You know, they were long dead, and that was when, you know, computers...
Or well,
they,
Forrest computers Gump, right?
Film, yeah, exactly, Forrest Gump, yeah. They made an entire movie.
They had Tom Hanks interacting with John F. Kennedy, you know, like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll keep us moving. And I thought this one was particularly funny given our conversations over the past number of episodes. So Indiana Jones and Mission Impossible 7 apparently are not looking like they're going to be profitable films by the time you add up the costs to make them, as well as the marketing costs and everything else. According to this article from Variety, it looks like they're going to lose about $100 million plus each. Which is not an inconsequential amount of money, especially in today's economy. Now, it's interesting because obviously Indy 5 was meant to be the sort of coda of the Indiana Jones films. So at least that sort of puts that to bed. And you're right. You know, we've talked about it, I think, on last week's episode. They're making toys. They're making Lego sets. They're making, you know, hats and whips and whatever to market this. So they're going to make their money in the long run. And they're going to put it on Disney Plus, and it's going to make money there. And they're going to put it on home video, and it's going to make money there. And they'll be fine.
It's going to be the Steelcase Blu-ray.
Yeah. Exactly. MI7 is a bit of a weird one because it did lose a fair bit of money and it won't make its money back, but they've already made the second part of this. So they're coming back with the second part of this too. So that's kind of a troubling sign for Paramount, because Paramount, this is sort of their baby, right? Like they want this to make all the monies for them. And if it's going to lose money for them, it does kind of make you wonder, is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2 the last Mission Impossible film?
Maybe they'll go in and make everything pink or something. I don't know.
I mean, the CGI money alone, just making Tom Cruise look human, it must be just astronomical.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
I can understand how that would get out of hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, good piece from Variety. I recommend if you're curious about sort of how these things work and the business of movie making, it's pretty interesting. But yeah, by the time you add all this up, both of these look like, you know, it's a blow for Disney on the indie side, and it's a blow for Paramount on the Mission Impossible side. And it does, you know, as much as we have successes like Barbie that's now cracked, I think, $1.2 billion worldwide, highest grossing film ever created by a woman, which is incredible. So great on that front. Oppenheimer looks like it's going to close out, you know, close to $1 billion by the time it's all said and done. You know, great for them. But then you have these other ones that are like, so all the ingredients are there, and yet somehow it doesn't work out in the end.
Well, I mean, people just weren't going to this. I mean, it's phenomenal, Barbie and Oppenheimer, in terms of the number of people. I mean, I'm sure if you look at the ticket sales today, the seats are just sold out, right? Blue Beetle beat Barbie last week, right? So
it did, although to be fair, that was like Barbie's, what, sixth or seventh week in the theaters it finally got dethroned. And it got dethroned, I think Blue Beetle only made like $30 million. Like, it was not a gangbuster win. I mean, I'm glad it is, because I know that there's, especially, there's a lot of discussion about the fact that, you know, since this is a Latinx movie, that maybe there's a little bit of an eye on that one to see if there's that sort of Black Panther kind of interest. It's not going to do Black Panther money, that's for darn sure, but it'll be interesting to see if that is a bellwether for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bad news for you, Tim. The Peripheral has been canceled at Amazon, in spite, once again, of the fact that it got a season 2 renewal. So this was another one of those shows that actually they said was coming back and they were going to make a second season. But now, in the light of the ongoing strikes that are happening with the writers and the actors, they have taken a second look at it and said, you know what, we're not actually going to go forward with this second season. So yeah, I mean, it's not the first time this has happened, and I don't think it'll be the last, but it's pretty crappy to keep doing this to fans to tell us you're good. It's renewed. When I hear renewed, I'm like, great, it's renewed. I can count on this being a thing that I want to watch. And it, honestly, you had watched the first season and said it was pretty good. I thought, oh, I'll put that on my to-do list. Now that I know it's canceled, it's on the long to-do list now, because what does it matter?
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, admittedly, though, it did have its weak moments. I mean, I think some of the long tail, like, is it kind of stretched a little bit of reality. I think it had a really good premise, and it really could have gone further with it than they did. But it was kind of meh after a while, right? You know. Yeah.
Well, either way, disappointing.
I'm not crushed. I mean, yeah. It's not Amazon's best work. Let's put it that way.
So yeah.
That's probably why.
We got our first trailer this week for Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, the fully animated take on Brian Lee O'Malley's classic graphic novel, which, of course, was a cult classic Edgar Wright movie. You and I are both huge fans of it. They are bringing back the whole original cast of the movie to reprise their roles on the voice side of this, but they're doing the whole thing in the style of Brian Lee O'Malley's art from the book, of which I'm a big fan. I'm the gleeful owner of a page from that original first book, thanks to my beautiful wife. And it looks great. It looks super fun. It's colorful. It's got a lot of energy to it. Again, teaser trailer, doesn't really get much into the plot. It looks like they're kind of doing the whole longer version of the story that we got in the movie. The longer, it's more the comic book version that lasted, you know, multiple books. I'll be curious to see if that's sort of all they're doing with it, or if they're going to go sort of off the story path. But again, I thought it was great. Really bright, really colorful. Again, didn't get into too much details, but I'm in. Like, this is going to be a lot of fun. So go Netflix. I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And the last thing I've got for us is that Mario is hanging up his plumber's wrench. Charles Martinet, who has been Mario since the early 1990s, is retiring, or, well, let's just say he's no longer going to be the voice of Mario. So Nintendo put out a little news brief this week saying that all the way dating back to Super Mario 64, Charles Martinet has been the voice of Mario. He will apparently not be the voice of Mario in the upcoming game coming out this fall. And he's transitioning to becoming the official Mario ambassador. More details to come. But it's particularly interesting given that we just saw Chris Pratt do the voice of Mario in the new Mario movie that came out this spring. And people were like, you know, Charles Martinet was right there. Why didn't you just sign him up? Maybe he's getting older and it's not as easy for him to do the voices anymore, or maybe there's a political decision, or maybe it's a money thing, who knows? But either way, on behalf of all the Mario nerds out there, and we have many of them in this house, it's kind of a bittersweet moment.
Did you watch the movie? Have you seen the new...
Haven't seen the movie yet. I promised my daughter that I would watch it with her, and she's been dragging her heels on it. So it's available here on Amazon Prime now, but for like as part of your package. So
I did watch it, and he does say Mario at one point, but not
Mario.
Like, it's definitely Chris Pratt voicing.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who does Lou. He calls him Lou in the movie. Luigi.
Yeah. Yeah. Is what it is.
Is it the guy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Oh, I know the guy you mean. Yeah.
Anyway,
Charlie Day.
Yeah, it was. It might have been Charlie Day. Don't quote me on that. But actually, let's fact check that. But I thought it was enjoyable. I watched it in two sittings. I didn't go through the one sitting and watch it. But Super Mario. Here we go. Oh, Charlie Day. Look at me. Took me a while to figure out who Princess Peach was. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but
Anya Taylor Joy, isn't it? Anya Taylor.
Yeah, I didn't know. I would never have guessed listening to that. But
the only reason I knew that was because at some point I saw on social media a picture of her in like looking like she was dressed like Princess Peach, and I thought, what was that? And I found out that she was going to the premiere dressed as Princess Peach. So
okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek, but not this week. This week we're talking about Star Wars Ahsoka, finally coming to the big screen in real life action with, like, you know, all the sort of Easter eggs from Rebels and Clone Wars, and Jonathan's going to fill us with them. I've got a few of my own sort of sideways glancing, tongue firmly planted in cheek Easter eggs, but, you know. We can just go through our regular stuff. I didn't take any notes on what they said and stuff like that, but, you know, as we normally do. But
you know, I got you covered.
All right. So you want to hear my first two Easter eggs?
Can I start with my elevator pitch and then we'll move
to
Easter
eggs? Okay, yeah, do your elevator pitch first. Yeah, sure.
All right. My elevator pitch for the first episode, we got two episodes. We'll do the first one and then we'll do the second one. Sure. My first elevator pitch was some wounds take more than the Force to heal. So, apt in a few different ways if you watch the episode. By the way, just for the record, in case you were confused, we're going to be talking about Ahsoka in detail. We're going to go through all kinds of stuff. We're going to spoil the heck out of it. So, you're in, you're out, you're out. This is your last warning.
Yeah. So, and you'd be pleased to know that I just finished watching the last episode of Rebels like two, three days ago.
Well, then you're ready.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it's funny because I thought, okay, I finished that. Now I can go watch the season 7 of Clone Wars. And then I realized, oh, I've already watched it. I'm like, wait, what? So, yeah, so I'm ready to go. So, it is pinnacle that you watch at least the last two episodes of Rebels to get some of the Easter eggs that are in this one, right? And some of the context we're talking about.
There's been a bunch of different lists. You can search pretty much anywhere that'll give you the sort of 5 essential things or 10 essential things that you should watch before you go in. Obviously, you know, it's much more rewarding if you've watched all of Clone Wars and you've watched all of Rebels and you've watched all of The Mandalorian and you're sort of caught up on all your Star Wars lore. However, there's definitely a lot tied into the last season of Rebels in particular, but the last couple of episodes of Rebels particularly that will be really telling as far as the first two episodes of this series.
So I can turn my two funny Easter eggs into like my elevator pitch, if you like.
Bring it. Yeah.
So Ahsoka Tano is a Fifth Elements fan.
Yes.
And she's obviously been following Harry Potter with the snitch.
Yeah, there was, I won't say it was derivative. It was its own thing, but it definitely had some vibes for sure.
Yeah, I was waiting for her to blow on it, you know?
Yeah, it also had a pretty big Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of vibe too. She's in the temple.
Yeah, I was thinking that too with the gold monkey thing at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of seemed like it was deliberate, but
And packing the schnitch in the coffee beans, I think, was a good touch for
it keeps the dogs off bay, right? They don't get at it that way.
Yeah. So that was an interesting piece where, you know, she kind of grabs it. I thought, like, oh crap, I've broken it.
Yeah, it's gotten so old, it's falling apart.
Yeah, we're talking about the first 5 minutes of the show. We're not talking about anything major spoilerific. So, although there was an introduction at the beginning, I thought that was almost Liam Neeson at first when the first robed one appears, right?
Oh yeah. Well, and again, there's deliberate echoes there. The them coming aboard the ship with their hoods down.
The brown and the dark one looking like
it definitely had vibes of episode one. And yeah, it's always a little nod. You can't make a Star Wars show without these little touches, nods, and stuff like that. Especially if Dave Filoni's doing it. I mean, he's such a.
I did notice for sure. That obviously John Williams isn't involved in the soundtrack because none of it sounded like him at all. And we should actually go back to the very beginning, and that is the scroller was not yellow and it didn't taper. So my comment to you is, as I was watching it live, was it's broken. The scroller's broken. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all left justified. It was very, very jarring, and it was red.
Yeah, no, because they used to do the newspaper justified thing, right? And red, I always thought was the Sith. Well, I guess it kind of was the Sith, you know, because whenever they did Rebels or whatever they or Clone Wars, they would always change the logo to red, right? Mm-hmm, if it was a Sith episode, right? Like Maul or whatever.
Yeah, and again, the episode obviously starts with a I don't know if we'll call them Sith yet, but a dark Jedi attack.
They had red laser, red lightsabers.
They had orange lightsabers.
Oh, were they orange? They looked red to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were actually distinctively orange, which is very interesting.
I mean, they do talk about the one having been trained by the dude with the the robot with the pointy sort of
Huyang.
He's the one that trains the. He's the one that teaches them how to do the lightsabers when they go and get the crystals, right, in the cave.
Yeah, so they would go to Ilum and they would get their crystals, and then on the way back, he basically teaches them how to build their own lightsabers using the crystals. So he's a recurring character. But
he's a Jedi. Like, he's a robot that's a Jedi?
He's not, but he's ancient. He's been doing this. This has been his job for millennia, taking these... Padawans, these young ones, and taking them
to Ilum.
He's like John
Hurt again in Harry Potter, who hands people their wands.
Pretty much,
right?
Yeah. Pretty okay, much, yeah, yeah.
Speaking of derivative,
the pew 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 I had for the first episode was we start with the introduction of these two new characters, the sort of dark Sith or dark Jedi and an apprentice type character. At the end of the episode, we get this great duel between Sabine using Ezra's lightsaber and the apprentice with her orange lightsaber. Always cool to see a nighttime lightsaber fight because the swords just look so vivid and stuff like that. And I thought that was a particularly good one. And it ends as it should have ended, which is Sabine's no match for a sort of fully trained dark Jedi and gets stabbed right through the gut. And
so can we
dial
back? I have that leads me to a big question, if I can throw it in here now. And that is, when was Sabine Ahsoka's apprentice or Padawan? Sorry, Padawan.
That's new. So we didn't know that that had been the case. We knew that she had trained with first Kanan when she got the darksaber. Again, spoilerville here, kids, in case you haven't seen Rebels or, we're going to talk about all the canon here. When she was training with the darksaber, which she was once the keeper of, she trained with Kanan, and then later on she trained with Ezra. So she's trained in the force arts, but mostly in the combat, using the sword, using a lightsaber, defending yourself, all that kind of stuff. But she's never shown any force sensitivity. She's never shown that she's in any way gifted with the force. So that was one of my first questions, and why did we never see a glimpse of Sabine as a force sensitive person in the original series, if this is where they were going? And I think the idea is that, you know, in the time between when Thrawn and Ezra disappear at the end of Rebels to where we are now, which is supposed to be a few years later, during that interim, at one point Ahsoka was training Sabine. They had a falling out of some kind, and here we are coming back to it. So it's us playing catch up as the viewers, right?
Right, okay.
But yeah, no, they've never mentioned that before. And the other question I have was what was the trigger? Because they never really talk about it. They never say what was the thing that drove them apart. Why did they separate initially? What caused that breakdown? So we haven't seen the come together or the breakdown. Hopefully they'll get into it a little more in detail. Although this series is kind of motoring along and it isn't taking a lot of time for conversation. It's a very quiet show so far. Plot moving forward, but not very character heavy, which I'm a little surprised by, given that they kind of have a lot riding on this. There's been a lot of dragging Star Wars through the mud the last little while. A lot of people didn't like the last season of Mandalorian. The last couple movies haven't been exactly hot. And it does kind of make you think, you know, if they need to hit this out of the park, they're kind of leaning really hard on the lore. They're really leaning on, like, I don't know if this is all just for people like me who are way into it and people like you who are way into it. Yeah. Or because if they're going for a broad audience, I think they're still going to be like, so who is she again? And why does she matter? Like, they only briefly reference in passing that she was Anakin's Padawan. They really haven't tagged up on a lot of this stuff. They really are just kind of moving forward, which is, again, for a deeply invested person like us, is fine. But for a casual Star Wars fan, man, they might get lost fast.
Yeah, it's true.
And if you didn't watch Rebels, there'd be a lot of who is this and what is that and why are we here and who, like, this
even the
would
cat
get confusing.
And the wolf thing in the mural and
all
and
of it,
like Hera's throwaway comment to Ahsoka about her master, and then she takes a turn, she turns her head, and then she mentions Anakin by name, but because she could have very well been saying, look at what happened to your master, right? He became this big black guy that, you know, lifts people up by their neck and stuff.
Yeah. You know? Although at this point in the chronology, he's dead. So
he's dead. Okay, yeah. I was going to ask, like, when it, because they did.
Yeah,
talk
this
about...
this is supposed to be 5 years. This is the same time period as Mandalorian, so it's 5 to 6. Well, now I guess 6 or 7 years after the events of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, and I think it's. I mean, it's important for people who haven't seen the Battle of Lothal or whatever, or the conclusion, mm-hmm. and that's Ezra, who was sort of a junior apprentice wannabe Jedi through Rebels. Cool.
By that point, he was essentially a Jedi Knight,
yeah,
right? Like, he'd come a long way.
Yeah, he'd done all that stuff. But I mean, but his solution to defeating Thrall was he called in the space whales, who then wrap Thrawn up as if, you know, almost like to the point where he looks like he's about to die. And the mm-hmm. two of them are whisked off into hyperspace.
Yeah.
And that's the end
to
of Ezra.
To space
Ezra.
Beyond space. They don't yeah. they don't even know where they went. They've just gone farther than people can track. And so that's what this whole story seems to be about, right?
I mean, and it's kind of like, you know, people will be like, oh, it's Force Awakens again. Here we go with the map thing. And how do we find Luke Skywalker? And again, it's the same... Mm-hmm. You know, dragging that through the mud too, and like you said, mm-hmm. people weren't really thrilled with that whole storyline of where the heck is Luke and why doesn't he want to help us and stuff like that, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Anyway. Easter eggs, man. The first episode was just like my Easter basket runneth over. It was ridiculous. So if you were a Clone Wars, Ahsoka, Rebels head, it was just hit after hit after hit. So, you know, stuff like inside of the tower. So the tower that Sabine lives in is Ezra's old communications tower. That's where he lived. And so the room is just filled with artifacts from Rebels. So his helmet collection, his orange spray painted speeder bike helmet, in there, which he wore in a number of episodes. His whole collection of Empire helmets that he was collecting are all in there. We saw the mural that is straight from it's, so that's Ezra, not Ezra, Sabine drew that, so that we see it in the first scene. We see Ryder Azadi, of course, Clancy Brown, back as Ryder Azadi. So he did the voice of Ryder Azadi on the show, and now he's actually him in live action, which is perfect. We see Home One. Home One is Admiral Ackbar's ship from Return of the Jedi. That's the one that leads the attack on the second Death Star. So that's, again, a nice little callback. So the hangar that Ahsoka lands in, that's where we last saw the Millennium Falcon and them, you know, landing back in there and stuff like that. So, you know, pretty memorable moments there. We saw in the first scene, and then later on, we see more of the Night Sisters, the Sisters of Dathomir, the Witches of Dathomir. That's all tied into Clone Wars stuff and Rebels stuff. They were this sort of a race of sort of sorceresses, witches, who could manipulate life and death, who were strong in the Force. And so that's where we see the temple at the beginning, and then later on, we find out that Morgan Elspeth, who is the person who sprung at the very beginning of this episode, is actually a descendant of the Witches of Dathomir, who were thought to be all dead. So that's kind of interesting too. We saw Hu Yang, who was David Tennant's character. So he played that character in the Clone Wars, of course. So
is he voicing it here too? Or
he is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Ryder Azadi, you got him next. Is that the young kid at the end that was with the Rebels at the very end? There is that. He's now a senator, I guess.
No, Ryder is the old guy, the guy with the white beard. That's Clancy Brown. So that's he's the one who was the sort of he was the governor, and then he was arrested and he was disgraced, and then he comes back. Yeah, so he's basically back in his role as the governor of Lothal. We saw a great Lothcat. We saw a real live Lothcat. They were, of course, ubiquitous in the original show. We'd see Lothcats all over the place. But
I didn't realize they had like chicken feet and that they ate kibble. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. I gotta admit, if they make a really realistic one of those, I'd take a Lothcat. It's pretty darn cute. But yeah, I mean, it was chock-a-block. You couldn't look. I mean, this was definitely one for the Deep Cuts fans. There was a lot of stuff in there. There was lots of little doodles everywhere. Sabine is an artist, so there's lots of little Sabine doodles everywhere. So we see that. Same ship, the A6 is what Ahsoka was flying around in Rebels. So again, we see that again. So yeah, just tons and tons and tons of stuff to wade through if you're a Deep Cuts fan. I'm going to watch it again at some point over the next week just to sort of see what else I can see. We obviously kind of just powered through a little bit so we could get on and record tonight. But yeah, I think there's just a cornucopia of Easter eggs to be found there. Best quotes. I've just pulled a couple I liked. Hera talking to Ahsoka, it's never a straight line with you Jedi, is it?
Right.
I thought that was a pretty apt way to describe the Jedi. And then, sometimes even the right reasons have the wrong consequences. I think that is the most true line of Jedi stuff. That's got to be a Dave Filoni line. That's pretty good. So that's pretty big. First episode, it starts with the jailbreak and it ends with one of our heroes impaled. So you certainly whipped through pretty fast. A little light on the dialogue and a little bit of catch up to be done even for the hardcore fans. Why are we here? What's who? What? Why? Who? What's going on here? Which I guess takes us to the second episode, right?
Well, before we get there, like just on some of the characters, like Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera, what did you think about her as that character? It's nice to see her in real life, but a little, not quite.
I love the Hera character. She's one of my favorites. And I love Sabine and I love Ahsoka. I think these are three strong, amazing female characters that have been done in Star Wars over the past number of years. I love all three of them. I really like Natasha Liu Bertizzo as Sabine. I thought she was great.
Yeah.
I'm still coming around to Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka. I like her a lot as a performer. I like her a lot as a person, but I'm still kind of, she's playing it so subdued.
Right.
And even as more of an adult character in her Rebels years, she was still a little more, I mean, she was definitely more serious than she was obviously as a little kid in Clone Wars, but she just seems a little joyless. And right. I get that obviously she's been through a lot of stuff, and obviously these are some dark times she's dealing with, but she's just a little flat for me right now. I'm warming up. And again, I love her, and she looks fantastic, and I think it's great.
The look is great. She looks good as Ahsoka. But yeah, you're right. I kept thinking, like, okay, if they do any flashback scenes, are they going to have to get a younger actress to play a younger Ahsoka? Because you're right, she was very young, mid-teen kind of vibe.
Yeah, when the Clone Wars starts, she's supposed to be like 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
So obviously like a child. And, you know, Ashley Eckstein, who did the voice throughout all of the animated appearances, was amazing in her voice performance and really evolved it into Rebels when she's more of an adult character. Now she's meant to be, I think, more the age that Rosario is, in her 40s. She's been around the block. She's quit the Jedi Order. She's seen a lot of good times and bad. And so maybe that's why she's playing it the way she is. But I'd like to see just a little more emotion out of her.
Yeah.
And as far as Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera, I loved, again, it was a great voice performance, but she was so motherly on the show, on Rebels. She really did, like, she and Kanan were the mom and the dad, and Sabine and Chop and Ezra and, drawing a blank on the Lasat's name. What's his name?
Him.
It'll come back
to you.
It will. Anyways, they were all amazing characters, but they were meant to be sort of like the kids, the goofy kids on the ship. And it's been so far,
Zeb,
really kind of, I guess she's trying a little bit. Zeb? She's trying to push Zeb. Thank you, Gara Zeb. I think they're trying to do her more as the sort of, you know, yeah, she tries to push Ahsoka and Sabine back together. So maybe she is being a little sort of mom-like, but I kind of miss that vibe a little bit from her. But again, it's early, so I'm hoping that we'll see a little bit more of that personality come too. And I will say, as we get into discussion about episode two, I saw more of that in that episode. So
yeah, I think the green eyes on Hera kind of really sort of sold me on the look of the character, I guess. You know, the only thing about their it's not hair, it's part of their bodies, right? These two races.
Oh,
right?
The head fins?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. They're a bit, you know, they're more animate in the cartoons, because obviously they're animated. But
and they can move a little more easily.
They're less like tails, like a tail would be, and they're more like, they look like foam, you know, they not quite.
Yeah. I thought they did a better job. I definitely thought Ahsoka's looked pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, because there was that dancer in Return of the Jedi that had the really long ones, right? That one was
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 2.
So the first one was called, we didn't talk about it, was called Master and Apprentice, which should have given us a way that there had to be something like that. But that could be played a couple of different ways too, right? It's not just the first two characters that show up. It could also be Ahsoka and Sabine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my elevator pitch for this one was coincidentally right on that same track. Line from Yoda, always two there are, no more, no less. So this one was very much about that, the duo of, we saw obviously the master and the apprentice for the Dark Jedi's working really well together in the first one, but there was a lot of still conflict and negativity between Ahsoka and Sabine. Here we see them finally getting back on the same page, and so now we have, you know, the duo versus the duo with a little bit more clarity as to this is going to be a buddy cop thing, the old cop and the new cop, to the point where, you know, she calls her Padawan and calls her master. And so they're sort of back into that dynamic again.
Right. Well, my elevator pitch is what, though? Back to tank?
Yeah. I mean, apparently it wasn't bad enough getting stabbed through the gut is not enough for a back to tank, apparently. Hitting the face by a Yeti is a problem, but
I guess it depends on what our vital organs get, you know, singed or whatever, right?
You know, it's funny. I saw that at one point she, you know, lifts her shirt and she's got this lightsaber mark scar on her belly that's healing. I don't know how these things work in the world of Star Wars a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But I was like, ooh, so did she just lose like an ovary and half her uterus? Like that is a lot of space in the midsection there that was missing.
I mean, like, is it like lower intestine or upper intestine?
Yeah.
Or whatever. But I guess, you know, when a lightsaber goes through, it kind of singes as it.
Well, it leaves a scored hole, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And why can't we see through her? That's what I want to know, right? So. Like, what do they feel her in with?
Well, you know, when we saw that in Mandalorian, didn't they robot parts? They put robot parts in, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. My pew-pew-pew for this one was the lightsaber fight / space chase. We got the sort of the duel where the Phantom II and Chopper and Hera are trying to track this ship before it goes into hyperspace. And we've got on the ground, we've got Ahsoka fighting against an Inquisitor as well as one of the more advanced hunter-killer droids. And it was cool the way they're sort of bouncing back and forth between those two sort of scenes and the sort of building the tension up and stuff like that. Interesting that they brought in an Inquisitor. The Inquisitors on all the other occurrences through Rebels and then into the stuff we've seen in the other shows on Disney Plus, they're very chatty. They're very chatty folks on the Obi-Wan series. They're very chatty on the Rebels series. This one, it just comes down and is like a ninja. He's just got like a mask on and is just like,
no
I'm here
words.
To fight.
There are no words. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting twist on the whole sort of Inquisitor thing. But yeah, so now not only do we have two Dark Jedi, but we actually have an Inquisitor with a double-ended lightsaber too. So the scales
I was going to say, on the pew-pew, there was a lot of good pew-pew in this. It was like Hera going up against a big ship and dodging the guns and Chopper, you know, yelling at her. I don't remember ever understanding a single thing that Chopper said in the Rebels series, but in this one, you could almost hear, have you been through my stuff? You know,
yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, I found it. You know, like you could almost make it out, right? Like it didn't
Chop's
need
always, Chop's always been a little bit, if you listen, the intonations are really strong. Not everybody knows, but Dave Filoni actually does the voice of Chopper. And yeah. He really wants him to be a throwback droid, something that is not like he's not R2-D2. He's not a modern, you know, cool. He's basically the last survivor. He's supposed to be the crotchetiest, oldest, mouthiest, you know, sort of squirrely, cowardly, goofy droid in the galaxy. And yeah, it was so much fun to see him. I mean, we've seen him in cameos a couple of times. We saw him, and he was in Rogue One. We saw him whiz by at one point. But yeah, really cool to see him.
Well, we didn't talk about it in, I don't know if we did talk about this, but in Star Wars Day or whatever they call it, they brought out a Chopper figure. Like, you know, I've got the R2-D2 back here that animates. They brought out an animated Chopper, right?
Yep.
I guess in looking forward to this series coming out, right? So...
Yeah, and he's funny too, because again, he doesn't quite have the same cool functions as some of his contemporaries. He looks a little more old school. He's got, you know, mismatched parts, and he's got, instead of having the cool, like, you know, protuberance that comes out of R2-D2 that does all the things, he has just like a claw. Like, he's a really interesting character.
You know, we forgot to talk about was this, you know, that the interface we talk about where the droids always stick in and they do that thing?
Where he uses the force to do it?
He uses the force to do that. Yeah, like again, couldn't they put like a plate over that thing or two-factor authentication? I guess, well, it is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Maybe
that's right. Before Apple got, yeah,
maybe they didn't have hackers or whatever back then, I guess. Although I guess Jedi sort of Sith guy is a hacker in a sense, right?
Yeah, in a sense.
Anyway.
Easter eggs for this one. So Chopper was a big Easter egg.
Yeah,
the Inquisitor was a big Easter egg. The Phantom too. For those of you who haven't seen
Rebels.
Was it
Phantom and Ghost were the two ships they had in the...
So the Ghost was the main ship and the Phantom was the second ship. At one point
smaller
in
one,
the
right?
series... Yeah. At one point in the series, Ezra, through being a bit of a dork, gets the original Phantom destroyed. And so inevitably they need another one. So he steals another one later on. And so that's the Phantom 2. They repaint it and basically make it the Phantom 2. So yeah. So again, fun to see that. I will say that's the only thing that's kind of missing from this is the Ghost. We haven't seen the Ghost, and the Ghost is such a huge part of Rebels, the ship itself.
Yeah,
it would be really fun to see that, but I'm hoping at some point, like Zeb shows up with it. Maybe something we'll see down the road. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
So my Star Wars Easter egg was a really bad green screen scene.
Yeah.
You know the part where they're sitting on, they're talking to the bald Imperial guy, or Empire guy?
Imperial, yeah.
Imperial guy,
yeah.
And Hera, and they're in that car, and they're supposed to be driving through this big, giant, you know, shipyard of stuff.
Yep.
Really bad green screen. Not as bad as Return of the Jedi, but still pretty bad.
Yep. Well, that dude was named Min Weaver, and he actually had a quote that I flagged, which was, an empire doesn't just become a republic overnight. You will still find ex-imperials at every level of the new republic government, which comes back about 10 minutes later when a bunch of the people working at the facility start pulling out guns and yelling for the empire, which, you know, yeah, nice foreshadowing on that one. other quotes I had, the past is the past, move forward. That's Huyang Tu Sabine. That was the winner, I think. And I thought of you the second it was said, her presence in the force is elusive, yet her determination is vivid. She is coming. That's Baylan at the end of the episode when they know that Ahsoka is headed their way. But I just loved when he says elusive. It's very episode one.
Ewan McGregor pronunciation. Yeah,
that's right. Elusive. Yep. And of course, the whole we should also mention this whole shebang was also dedicated to Ray Stevenson, who plays Baylan. He died after this was made.
Really?
Very tragically. We talked about it a number of episodes back that he had tragically died. But it was very nice that they paid homage to him at the end of the first episode. And of course, this is his last work, which is really quite sad. But he's been really cool so far. So. Good legacy to leave on. The only other thing that I had was for my question was, I think the one that I think we need to have, which is this show too deep in animated lore for other people to enjoy it?
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of what I'm saying. This is the first time I've sort of been caught up on most of the Star Wars stuff. I haven't done a lot of I've read some of the books and stuff like that, and I think I've read some of the books you haven't read, but I am glad I did get to see the last couple of episodes of Rebels, because it kind of dovetails right into this, surprisingly, even though, like, how many years has it been since that series ended?
I want to say 2017.
Yeah, it's been a while, like, right?
A while back. Yeah.
Because it kind of just picks up, because she literally touches the mural in the last episode, you know, when you see Ezra just leave, as I mentioned earlier, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, because we know that Thrawn is coming back. I guess you don't need to know who he is if you start watching this show, but yeah, the whole, I mean, and like they kind of sprung the relationship between Ahsoka and Sabine on you and me, because we hadn't, I mean, I had to say to you, what? And you said, what?
Yep.
So that's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't know if they start talking about, the Jedi that died, now I've forgotten his name. You know how I mean? Ezra's master.
Oh, Kanan Jarrus.
Yeah. Because there's a baby at one point, isn't there?
Yeah, Jason. That was the other thing that's kind of weird, because we saw Hera, and now obviously a working person, doesn't necessarily have to talk about their child at work all the time. She's a general in the New Republic and has a lot of responsibilities, but she also has a child that we've seen in this era, who is, you know, the product of her and a Jedi Knight, or a Jedi Master at that. Interesting that we haven't had even a reference. It's not like maybe at some point Sabine goes, how's Jason?
Yeah.
Seems a little strange. You know, these two were like tight, like mother-daughter tight. And it's strange that, like, they are a little cool to one another, too. Now, again, I get, obviously, time and distance and, and you know, Sabine's always been a little mercurial, but it doesn't seem quite as on the nose yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe we'll see more of that. We do have 6 episodes over the next 6 weeks to go, but
so the hyper, you've got here in your notes, hyperdrive from SSD, is that a Star Destroyer?
Superstar,
which is the big one from the last series of movies,
the one
right?
that crashes into the Death Star in the final movie. That's like the Darth Vader model. When they go to the wrecking yards on Corellia, they're pulling these hyperdrives, and they sort of say, well, you know, what are you pulling them for? And he's like, oh, they're for these ships. And she's like, we don't need engines that big, like the ones that are from the Super Star Destroyer. But he never says Super Star Destroyer, he says SSD. But again, Star Wars nerds, SSD is a Super Star Destroyer. And so then we see them delivering that at the end to build this, what looks like a Stargate, or a big portal called the Eye of Sion, which is going to be what theoretically is what transports Thrawn back into our universe. The part that's funny about this is most of what we saw in the trailer so far was in these 2 episodes. We haven't really gone too much beyond that, which is good, because I don't really want them to show me much more in trailers than the first couple episodes.
Right, yeah.
But we did see Thrawn in the trailers, so we know Thrawn's going to show up. And that knowing that that's the outcome, and knowing that Thrawn is going to be sort of the big bad of the Mandalorian slash Ahsoka slash Book of Boba Fett universe over the next few years is cool, but it also kind of this long preamble for, oh, we need to collect this part, and then this part's going to do this, and then we're going to build this thing. It's like, yeah, cool, get me there. Like, I know you're going to bring back Thrawn. Hopefully you're going to bring back Ezra. Well, I know you're going to bring back Ezra because you keep putting the guy's name in the opening credits, so he's clearly coming back too.
Will he look like Mark Hamill with the long hair and the disheveled look, and will he throw?
No, I don't know. I guess we'll see. But
maybe drinking green milk this time instead of blue milk. You know?
That's right. Whatever they serve on the other side of the galaxy. But I thought it was just kind of strange that they were kind of this slow of a burn over the first two episodes, where we're still like, we've at least got one more episode before they finally actually either go to wherever they need to go or bring whatever they need to bring. We know this is going to happen. So, like, on with it. Let's go. Pick up the pace. Here we go.
I guess one more question.
I don't need to go on the Raiders of the Lost Ark tour and pick up all the souvenirs along the way. Just,
yeah, you know. Or the Horcruxes or whatever they're called from Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly.
But does Chopper have a habit of missing when he's trying to throw a tracker onto something? Is that because she says to him, try not to miss this time?
Yeah, I was trying to remember if that was a specific reference, and it may well be. I'm going to go and cast around on the Easter egg boards after this. I'm sure there's dozens of things that are in there. It's probably an allusion to an episode at some point, but I don't have them encyclopedia catalog in my brain right. Maybe I should, but...
And but you've got building a Stargate here in your notes, too. Is that like a crack against... the Eye of Sion?
That's what they called that thing, right? That's what they called that thing they're building with all the hyperdrives in it and stuff like that. But yeah, basically, to me, it was like, so you're building a Stargate?
Oh,
so
okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of those Jedi, I think from...
The ones where they lock in to do their hyperdrive?
Yeah, exactly. The round...
I thought maybe that's what it was at one point, and maybe that is what they're building, but it looked like a portal of some kind, because it looks like that's what they're trying to build, right? Is this thing that connects the far side of the galaxy so they can get back.
They were putting in the third SSD drive, right?
Hyperdrive. Yep.
Solid-state drive, just like by my
solid-state drives. That's right. Exactly. That's right. Cool. Anyway, I thought this was a good start. I would say somebody who is like way deep in the lore, like, man, this was just candy. Like, this was just a big bag full of candy. You know, again, I think my favorite part of it so far is Sabine. I think that's pretty on brand. I think Hera's still a work in progress. I think that Ahsoka's a bit of a work in progress.
I mean, I like Rosario Dawson. That's fine with me. I think I'm okay with her.
That's, you know what? Whatever she chooses to do with the role, I trust her. She's a very talented performer, and I think she's going to be fine. And so is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, for that matter. You know, again, she's one of our favorites from... We were talking about Scott Pilgrim earlier. But I think...
Her portrayal in Scott Pilgrim is great. I love her in that role.
It is. Yeah. Not the first time she's been green. But anyways.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about Sabine's hair? We haven't talked about her hair. So the first thing I noticed was, okay, like she did have, in Rebels, she had the blue hair with the orange tips for a long time. And then like, in the last season or so, she had cut it short. It was just pretty much blue.
Well, she dyed it white. It was white at one point. Yeah.
And then you see her here in the first episode, and it's like a lot of blue, and then, you know, like 5 or 6
fiery
inches
tips
of orange. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even right when we first see her, and then, you know, when she does suit up, we didn't talk about the Mandalorian. Her armor was, to me, when you first see her helmet under the table, to me, that was an Easter egg too. But when she lays out the armor and then puts it on, and then she does the little, I don't know, ceremonial cutting of the hair kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Then she looked like Sabine. Nice, the very last time you see her in character, she with the armor on and the short hair, that's when she looked closest to Sabine. I mean, the way they've eyeshadowed her eyes too. So when she closes her eyes, and she does it a few times, and it very much reminds me of how the animated character looked, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a good casting from a visual point of view for her, for sure.
Yeah. No, I think Natasha Lubergizzo has done a really nice job with that character so far. I was a little disappointed that they armored her up and didn't bother putting the helmet on her, not even for a second. I was like, hey.
Yeah, well, it's coming.
Hey.
Like, it's coming, but she does carry the helmet a lot, right? In Rebels too.
She does. Like, you do see she's not a zealot like Din Djarin. She doesn't have to wear her helmet all the time and whatever. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see her with a... her uniform back on and the whole nine. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Do you want to move on to the watch list?
Hells yeah.
All right.
Watch list it.
So you've got the first crack at it.
Yeah, I just wanted to flag Foundation. Last episode, we talked about just sort of the role that Disney Plus is on and the things that we've been enjoying. I caught up and watched the last two episodes of Foundation on the weekend. And I just wanted to highlight it. If people aren't watching this season of Foundation, if people watched the first one and gave up, season two is way stronger than season one. It's set across one sort of period in time in the Foundation. It's not jumping all over quite as much. There are some flashbacks and things like that, but it's not nearly as timey-wimey as the first one that was really jumping all over the place and really kind of jumping from planet to planet. Here we're jumping from planet to planet, but we're really kind of focusing on like four or five key players as we go through. And it's great. I'm really digging this series now. Like, I enjoyed season one, but season two has really brought it up a level for me. The performances are really strong. Again, the production value is so high. Still, I think there's four and more episodes to go this season. But yeah, if you weren't sure about it and you want to think about getting back into it, I would highly recommend jumping back in for season two of Foundation, because it's been really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think going back to, you've not read the first bunch of Foundation books, right?
No.
Yeah. They're a great series of books. Don't get me wrong, but they're very typical of like 50s and 60s pulp sci-fi fiction, right? I mean, the world that Asimov creates is great, which is the reason why I would recommend reading them, even if you can get through the writing, right? Because it's written in that sort of like before space travel was even a thing kind of space travel, right? I have a disconnect between what we're seeing in this show and what I remember in reading the books 30, 40 years ago, right? Like, how long have we known each other? It's been way long before that, right? Like, I think I read them in my late 20s or mid-20s. But, late 20s it would be. And then, but we did get a glimpse of one of my favorite characters, which I've talked about on the show. I don't know if you remember me mentioning him before. But in the second Foundation book, there's this character that comes out of nowhere called the Mule that everybody's afraid of.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. They show him in a flashback in the season.
She has a flash forward, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where she has an encounter with the Mule, and they just mentioned the Mule. And it's kind of like, it's like dropping the name Thrawn and then running away, which I would think maybe later on in this season, or maybe if there's a season three, the Mule will become a very big part, because he was a huge part of the second Foundation.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And the actor who's playing that is one of the guys from Sex Education. So I recognize the character, the actor. I couldn't tell you his name. I think he's Swedish. But yeah, I was just like, oh, what's happening here?
Yeah.
And it's a pretty scary flash forward, too. Like, it's pretty apocalyptic.
Yeah. 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 So it's interesting. It's interesting to see. And it's kind of funny because I don't remember a manifestation of Harry Seldon. Although he does pop into he's kind of like the galactic, what's the thing in Hitchhiker's Guide, the Encyclopedia Galactica,
every now and then
pops in and kind of explains, well, this is all meant to happen. We've talked about, it was written down in the book. He pops in every like 50 years or something like that and sort of says, see, he told you this would happen, you know? And that's what I remember about Harry Seldon. He wasn't so much like here. They've turned him into a person. I would have remembered that in a book. That I don't remember from. And people, hey, ask, you know, hashtag ask Spotcast if I'm wrong. Keen, if you're listening, please tell me I'm wrong. Right?
Yeah.
The books. Yeah. Anyway, so I have a few things on my watch list. Just one was a bit of a surprise. Just yesterday, I had some time to kill. I had, you know, was between various studying that I was doing, and I sat down and watched The Covenant. Partly because it's Jake Gyllenhaal, and not so much because it's Afghanistan, because I don't really need that right now. But it's a Guy Ritchie movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, let's see, because I liked his Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and I liked, you know, Snatch, and all the other stuff that he's done as a director. So I thought, well, let me see how he approaches this subject. And it's a really good movie. The first part is amazing. Like, you're just on the edge of your seat. And then the second part is kind of a bit, you know, typical American, but I think it might be based on a real, on an actual story, right? It's based on actual scenarios and things that really happened in the Afghani war with the Taliban and stuff like that. But yeah, those Taliban, man, they make stormtroopers look like Disney characters, man. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a different war.
So, and then I went with my sister and my niece to see this really amazing existential sci-fi flick. It was so strange and so otherworldly and fantastically shot and really big budget. It's called Barbie.
Barbie, whoa, interesting. Yeah,
yeah. No, I definitely recommend Barbie's fun. I mean, I was a little, I've heard, you know, some people liked it, some people didn't like it. You know, I was surrounded by Barbies growing up, you know, because my sister had them, and so obviously I played with them every now and then. But
G.I. Joe needed a girlfriend, right?
Well, G.I. Joe is, yeah, whatever. But, you know, I don't know what my sisters did when they bored my G.I. Joes. But anyway, not going to go there. But yeah, it was really fun. I mean, it sort of plays off the sort of fantasy, you know, I hate to say it, fantasy place where, you know, like empowering young girls, it's a great message mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But when you get out into the real world, all the messages that Barbie teaches you about, you know, what could possibly be just isn't, right? And Ken goes out there and discovers and brings back, you know, some bad sentiments back to Barbie land, and Will Ferrell Solaris as the CEO of Mattel. So it's definitely worth watching.
Is that a big screen movie? Should it be seen on a big screen? Does it matter?
If you've ever collected anything or watched and looked at any of the paraphernalia that came with Barbie, well, you've probably seen Barbie stuff at Fan Expo and stuff like that. That's stuff that people collect, like the there's a scene with the ambulance, right? Ken runs into the ocean and whacks his head on a plastic wave. Right. So he needs some medical attention. So the doctors arrive, the two lady doctors arrive with their ambulance, and the ambulance, it's, you know, it's split down the middle and it opens up like this. So it splays out and then the table falls out. I mean, like that kind of stuff. And then they x-ray his arm, and instead of, like, you know, pretending to x-ray, they hold up a cardboard heart-shaped x-ray with an arm on it, and they go, look, your arm is fine. Like, because I mean, that's what you would have gotten this goofy plastic splay open ambulance, and the x-ray would have been a little cardboard cutout that you took out of the packaging and, like, you know, cut it out of the cut it, you know, use your box tops or whatever. And I mean, they played that stuff down, like even there's a scene where Ken is throwing Barbie's clothes out of her dream house, and it's all the collectible stuff. Like, they freeze it in the air as it's falling, and they're like, the collectible, blah, 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 you know, the 1960, you know, whatever, fur coat, you know, with the matching purse. And it's funny because it was a little bit disturbing, too, from my perspective, because there were a lot of young kids in the showing that I was at. And I know it's not appropriate for young kids. I mean, it's okay. I guess they're not going to get a lot of the double entendre, but there were some women in that theater who didn't stop laughing. Like, just being in the room with that, you know how you say when you go see a movie in a theater, you get the crowd thing. This one woman beside me just, like, guffawed at just about everything. I did laugh out loud once or twice, right? So, but yeah, I definitely think
it speaks truth to experience for a lot of women, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, because, I mean, they all grew up with this, you know, with, like, there was Midge, the pregnant Barbie, that didn't go well. And,
they and Alan, the best friend. Side. Alan.
Was there an Alan? Really?
Alan was Ken's best friend. Yes, apparently it was an Alan doll.
And there's only one of him. And Michael Cera says, I don't know why that is. Because there's like a zillion Kens, right?
Yeah.
All the cool guys are called Ken, right? You know, and it's definitely fun. But if you go into it thinking, like I said, like my tongue firmly planted in cheek, but not really, existential sci-fi, you know, It's a bit like the Truman Show in that sense, you know. So it is definitely worth watching. But yeah, I do recommend you see it if you can in the big theater. The other thing that came out, which we haven't talked about, is Solar Opposites. I think you watch it with your kids, right?
Yep.
We talked a bit about the what are they going to do with Rick and Morty? What are they going to do with Solar Opposites? Because the guy who's been
Justin Roiland
has been canceled. They deal with the voice. I don't know if you've watched the first episodes of the season.
Haven't yet.
Within 2 minutes, they deal with that.
Nice.
And it's pretty much, get over it. This is how I sign now.
Okay.
Excellently executed. Like, right off, like, let's get that out of the way. It's done. You know, how, like, you know, how we, and then he goes into the intro where he says, you know, I, you know, the bit about the comet hitting the Earth, and yeah, I've been holding the pupa this whole time. And, you know, like, he just, like, rolls with, like, the, it's a completely different voice. Like, they don't even pretend to make it sound the same. Hmm. Right. But he deals with it right off the top, like, with the first three lines of dialogue. He's like, get over it.
It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, it's Solar Opposites is still sort of the second banana to Rick and Morty. I think it'll be interesting to see what the response is to the Rick and Morty change.
Oh, so than this. They make. I mean, this season, I got to go back and watch the previous seasons, but there's a couple of episodes. I think I'm four episodes in or five episodes in, and there's a couple of episodes in, or six. There's six. They dropped six. I don't know if they're dropping anymore, but which is what I complained about. They dropped them all at once. But
yeah,
I think
the
fourth episode, if I remember correctly, was like, what? They put that on television?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
That good. Yeah. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. And then the last thing I watched was, I stumbled across this. I've seen bits of, what's her name now that plays Nebula on Marvel?
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan. Yeah. She, Amy Pond of Doctor Who, she did a couple of makeup videos on being Nebula. I saw those a while back, but she's now put out A Week in the Life of Nebula, and she got in trouble for doing this, but she took her iPad and she filmed everything from getting up in the morning, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is my driver. Hey, driver, say hello. And going through the whole process. This is where the trailers are, you know, and this is, you know, this is the makeup thing, and this is where I become Nebula, and then the morphing into Nebula, and then how she learns her lines. And she does a whole week of her life, including going to LA to do press and coming back to do reshoots and stuff like that. What's interesting, though, about that role, because, you know, in the show, she's got completely black eyes, right?
Yeah.
She doesn't wear contacts. They must do all that in post.
Oh, interesting.
Which is kind of cool, because I wonder if that's what they're doing with Hera in this show, because I was going to say the green eyes in Hera in Ahsoka really cemented the character for me, especially on the
holographic and some version. Of them, they wear like the contacts and stuff like that, but I think it depends on the, obviously, the artist, because it's hard to emote with those things in,
well,
too.
You probably
right?
can't see if they're black contacts, you know, like.
No, I mean, they'd be like sunglasses or something. Yeah,
like this, let me hit you with my blind, you know. Yeah, no, I think in that case they must have to do it in post, but I that's something they could do. I mean, that would be relatively easy, right? So knowing Photoshop as well as I do, but yeah, so I highly recommend, if you're interested in how all of these characters get into makeup and what an actor goes through in a week of shooting, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning and flying to LA for this and that and whatever, you know. Yeah, it's hilarious. Actually, what was it, oh, there's one line in the Barbie movie which is absolutely hilarious, because Helen Mirren is the narrator, right?
Yeah, I've heard bits, yeah.
And there's one scene where Barbie's having a realization moment about how ugly she is, right? And Helen Mirren comes on and says, "Note to the movie makers: next time you cast a role like this for this particular scene, don't do Margot Robbie." Because she has no weight. Even in her worst moment, she's beautiful, right?
Yeah. That's funny.
I thought was funny. Anyway, but yeah, that's it for me, and that's it for this week. And so, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you, Jonathan?
You can find me, right here on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, you can find me at youtube.com/@JPK, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @JPKNews.
All right. My name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, all the machines. And I think maybe on this one, on the YouTube as well. But until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
by now the titles are over and the singing. And Mike's done his bit.
I was going to say, thanks, Mike's done what Mike does.
Yeah.
Yep. And Mike does what Mike does.
Mike with the silent outro. I don't know how Mike's doing with his career as a voiceover guy, but I'm sure he's getting some work.
He's done well for us.
Yeah. It's funny, like, I loaded iOS 17 on, or iPadOS 17 on my iPad here, and I went through the 150 lines you have to read to create a voice, a digital voice of yourself.
Oh, interesting.
It's an accessibility feature they added in iOS 17 so that you can, it listens to you how you say things and gives you sample words and things like that. And then you basically can just go back in and just say, read this text, and it'll come out sounding kind of like me. Not 100% like me, but enough that it would fool you.
Creepy.
You know? Yeah. By the way, speaking of which, I don't know if you've ever heard...
We need to do that for Jaime. When Jaime's not available, we'll just put Jaime on and be like, well, what do you think, Jaime? How's it going?
Mark's actually never... is it Mark? Mark has met me and Jaime in the same room, but I don't know why he says this, but he says all the time that he thinks that I'm pretending to be Jaime and Jaime's pretending to be me. So, because he's never met us both at the same time. But he has, in fact. I have photographic evidence of the fact that he's met us. But he has this ongoing theory, right? So...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've never met Jaime and me in the same time at the same place.
I have not. For all I know, Jaime is a figment of your imagination.
A simulacrum, yes. Because you've never actually seen him on camera. That's the other thing, too, right?
Well, I've seen him on camera.
Have you? On this show?
Mm-hmm.
When?
I can't remember what for. We did it at one point. I think we were trying something at some point. Because I definitely saw him moving around. No?
No, there's no video evidence of that. Well, no existing video evidence. You know, it might have been an accidental. Oops, the video went on for a second, but I don't think he's ever been portrayed in video here. Yeah, it was.
As far as we know, there is a Jaime Lopez Jr. who does live near Seattle, Washington.
He claims to live near Seattle, Washington. He could be a guy in Mimico with a digital delay, for all we know, right? So the way Zoom works. Coming back to this digital voicing, so I wanted to say. So I don't know if you've heard the stories of how they're copying grandchildren's voices and then calling grandparents and saying,
"Oh,
I've been arrested. Don't tell my mom. Send the money. Somebody, they're going to, the lawyer's going to send the guy to come to the door to pick up the, and people are like, whoa. So here's the thing. Speak to your kids. We need to come up with a code word.
Okay. Right? Well, maybe not do it on the podcast, but
no, I'm saying in future. Yeah. I mean, well, I can also edit this out, but I mean, in future, and I'm saying this to other people too, like maybe you need to have, like you and I need to have a code word. So I know it's really you and you know, it's really me. Carol and I have established a code word so we would know each other because it's something only we would know from our past kind of thing. Right. So, to be fair,
I love my son and my daughter, but if they get arrested, just leave them there, maybe for a night. I think it's okay. It's fine. Probably did whatever they deserve to get, just maybe night.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not them calling.
No, I know. I'm just saying. If anybody calls, just be like, no. Click. I don't care if it's really my kid. Just
maybe the secret could be, what did your dad say to do with you when you got into this position, right?
No, ignore dad. We know what he'd say.
Yeah, ignore.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.